Well, all of these things are extreme cases of international terrorism, if not the more severe crime of aggression, the major war crime. But let's give the benefit of the doubt to Washington and assume that it's only international terrorism. It surely satisfies the official U.S. definition of terrorism, which was formulated at the same time, the early 80s, that is, the calculated use of violence or the threat of violence to attain goals that are political, religious, or ideological in nature. You go back to James Bennett's description of the U.S.-Israeli invasion of Lebanon, fits that case, that definition precisely. Furthermore, by far the most extreme acts of terrorism, international terrorism, in the region in those years, the 1980s, were either U.S.-initiated or U.S.-backed, and that included the peak year of international terrorism, 1985. It was picked as the peak story of the year. These facts are misrepresented here in a most astonishing and revealing way. I'll come back to it if you like, but the facts are quite clear. You may recall that President Reagan's special envoy to the Middle East, who was more or less in charge of all of this, was a gentleman named Donald Rumsfeld, who's now running the military component of the current war on terror. Reagan's ambassador to Honduras, who supervised the international terrorist operations for which the United States was condemned by the World Court, is John Negroponte, who's now running the diplomatic component of the current war on terror at the United Nations. This is hardly ancient history. It bears rather directly on the current phase of the war on terror that was declared by the Reagan administration 20 years ago when it took office, with much the same rhetoric as today, and the same personnel, and was conducted in ways that may easily be forgotten here, but are not forgotten by the victims. You can do a little research project to see how well they're remembered here by just seeing how often any of this is brought up in the reams and reams of paper that have been devoted to the war on terror since September 11th. And that's an interesting insight into ourselves, the most important topic. We can learn more about the current phase of the redeclared war on terror by considering how the current international terrorist atrocities are regarded right now. Not ancient history like the 80s, but the current ones. Well, in fact, there is a lot of scholarly literature now on terrorism, big topic, and in it there is some reference to the 1980s. So if you take a look at, say, the journal Current History in December, good journal devoted to terrorism, they discuss, scholarly articles, discuss the mention the 80s as an era of state-sponsored terrorism in which the United States played a proactive role against terrorism, meaning international terrorism sponsored and run by the United States is a proactive role against terrorism. Orwell would have appreciated that. In Turkey, in April 2000, the State Department issued its annual report on international terrorism, and it singled out Turkey for, I'm quoting, for its positive experiences in countering terror. It also picked out Algeria for its positive experiences, one of the worst terrorist states in the world. And the third one that had positive experiences was Spain, not as bad as those two, but hardly very pretty either. So they had positive experiences in countering terror by carrying out some of the worst terrorist atrocities of the mid and late 1990s with crucial U.S. support. It was the lead story in the New York Times, reported by Judith Miller, who's their specialist on these topics, with no comment about what it meant. In the current scholarly literature, our war on terror, I'm quoting, has no better friend and ally than Turkey, thanks to the capabilities of its armed forces demonstrated in its anti-terror campaign. Okay, if Milosevic were an ally, he would not be standing before an internal court for facing war crimes trials. Rather, he'd be praised for the success of his anti-terror campaigns, and he would be chosen to lead new ones, and much like Suharto, who was one of the great killers and torturers of the late 20th century. He was praised in the mainstream as a moderate who's at heart benign as the blood was flowing, and he was hailed as our kind of guy by the Clinton administration, shortly before he was overthrown by popular rebellion. Actually, the U.S. ambassador in Pakistan is using the same words for Pakistan's dictator today. Turkey is grateful for U.S. support, for the support that you and I gave, decisive support for its campaign of murderous state terror, as incidentally it was called accurately by Turkey's Minister of Human Rights and by very courageous Turkish intellectuals, among them a prominent sociologist who spent much of his life in prison for recording the facts. He actually rejected an award from the Fund for Free Expression here because of U.S. support for Turkey's murderous state terror. In gratitude for Clinton's enormous contributions to massive international terrorism, Prime Minister Ecevit was the first to offer troops to fight the war on terror in Afghanistan. And now Turkey has just been selected to serve as the force to protect Kabul from terrorism funded by Washington. There are others, too, who happily enlist on the war on terror. So no one's more enthusiastic than the Russians, who are eager to have U.S. support for their own monstrous crimes in Chechnya, or the brutal dictator of Uzbekistan, who's also our kind of guy right now. Well, again, Orwell would have been open-mouthed in astonishment as all of this proceeds, evoking little comment. But if we want to break convention and have a look at what we're doing, we can learn a lot about the war on terror and more generally about the effects of September 11th on policy.